This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Our next guest is Emily Bazelon, senior editor at Slate. And her new book is about something that's growing in prevalence, maybe, definitely in intensity and definitely in awareness, bullying, especially in the digital age where, because of things like Facebook and other social media, kids just cannot escape their tormentors even when they're at home. Bazelon's new book is called Sticks and Stones, Defeating the Culture of Bullying and Rediscovering the Power of Character and Empathy. She joins us now in the studio. Emily Bazelon, welcome back to Radio Boston.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
It's great to have you across the table. Usually we talk to you over the phone.
It's so true.
And in a moment, listeners, I have to tell you that we're going to bring in Amanda Palmer. She's one of the most creative and entrepreneurial independent musicians working right now. And even she has been touched by the insidious tentacles of cyberbullying. And she's going to tell us what she did about that. But Emily, let's begin with you. It's a terrific book. And very nuanced, which I appreciated, because this is a subject, bullying, that can, you know, get people to have very extreme and unwavering opinions. But I was wondering if you might be able to start with your, you know, a brief story of your own experience when you were younger with bullying.
Yes, I write about this in the book. When I was in eighth grade, I had a moment, which I think a lot of us experienced, of being fired by my friends. And this was a group of girls I'd been really close to. And so it was very painful. I spent a lot of time crying at home, wondering what I had done wrong. And then I succeeded in making a new friend, which was good, but my new friend had a group of popular girls who were really after her. And there was this intense moment for her of public humiliation in our lunchroom at school, and I remember watching and not stepping up. And so one of the reasons I wrote this book was in hopes of learning about and helping kids figure out how to do better.
So, I mean, that experience really struck home with me because, listeners, here's maybe a little TMI. Same thing happened to me when I was
there
in high school.
Go.
I got dumped by my friends my senior year, and it hurt, but, you know, I lived and moved on. And I thought to myself, while that was a painful event, it feels like it was sort of categorically different than what kids and young people experience now because, you know, I was like, big deal, whatever. I didn't have to think about my friends 5 seconds after this happened. But yet it seems like bullying now is of a different quality and more unrelenting than it was than, say, when you and I were in middle or high school.
I think that's right. Now, of course, we grew up before the internet and we didn't carry around cell phones. And I think that makes a huge difference in how kids experience these events. When I think back to my own eighth grade and I imagine what it would have been like if we'd all been on Facebook and I'd known that kids were talking about me after school, instead of having a respite when I got home, I would have felt, I think, continually excluded and under attack. And that, I think, is one of the reasons why we have this heightened awareness of bullying right now.
Heightened awareness. Do you think that it's worse, though? Is bullying worse than it was before?
On the one hand, kids used to get physically beaten up more when we were growing up than they do now. And I think we've succeeded in schools, and the statistics show this, in reducing school violence. However, the psychological harm that I think cyberbullying really feeds into is a serious problem. And that aspect of it, I think, for some kids has gotten worse.
I mean, and this is the thing that I think is one of the things that's driving the added awareness, because, I mean, here we are in Boston. And as you know, because you covered this story, Massachusetts is home of one of the more high-profile bullying cases, and that of Phoebe Prince, who was the South Hadley High School student who ended up committing suicide after being bullying. Now, you actually say that's a too simplistic an interpretation of what happened to Phoebe.
Right. So it's important to say that Phoebe did experience bullying, particularly on the day she died, and that was a trigger for what happened to her. My reporting about this story showed that she had a more complicated mental health history, and really this isn't surprising. It's true of most kids who take their own lives that they have a history of depression. That was true in Phoebe's case, and she also had attempted suicide before and had a history of cutting. So my point is not that bullying played no role in her death. It did. And I think that other people really could have stepped in to help her. There were some warning signs. But it's too simple to say that the kids who bullied her are directly to blame and solely to blame for what happened to her. That was what I was pushing back against.
Okay. And so tell me a little bit more about that. Like, where would you apportion responsibility then?
I think that the adults in Phoebe's life also had some responsibility for what happened to her. And it's also important to remember, from the point of view of the kids who were cruel to her on the day she died, Phoebe had a fair amount of social power in her school. She was a ninth grader who was interested in seniors and boys and having success in that. And so I don't think most of the kids had any appreciation for how vulnerable she was inside.
Hmm. Listeners, we're speaking with Emily Bazelon. She's senior editor at Slate Magazine and author of the new book, Sticks and Stones, Defeating the Culture of Bullying and Rediscovering the Power of Character and Empathy. And that subtitle has really got me thinking, so I want to ask you a little bit more about that later. But listeners, have you ever been bullied? Or maybe you've seen that look in your child's eyes and know that something's not quite right with them at school, that maybe someone's tormenting them. How did you handle it? Is bullying worse now? Do you think it's worse in the digital age? And how much of what we're seeing now, maybe that cruelty, that lack of respect, how much of that has to do with our broader society and the example we are all setting for young people? As the subtitle of Emily Bazelon's book says, maybe we need to rediscover the power of character and empathy, but how do we do that together? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us online at radioboston.org. Now, Emily, I want to dive in more deeply into the research and the reporting that you've done about the cyberbullying aspect of this story. But in order to do that, I'm going to actually welcome in Amanda Palmer, who is a musician. She's formerly of the Dresden Dolls, really popular, entrepreneurial, has a great presence in the digital space. She's been on the show before. Amanda Palmer, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's really great to have you. And I wonder if you could tell us, we're inviting you on today because I wonder if you could tell us about the story of how on your blog you sort of tackled this issue of cyberbullying head on.
Oh, well, the story is pretty interesting. I was doing what a lot of musicians will not admit to doing late one night, which I was ego surfing.
That's a great term for it.
I forget who came up with that, but when I heard it, I was like, "Oh, that's that thing we do." So I was, I don't know what was going on with me that night, but I was reading about some people criticizing one thing or the other about me, which is funny because I was sort of the one being weirdly bullied by whoever it was, fans or journalists, and it occurred to me to type in "hate Amanda Palmer" into Google, and with Google's sort of like instant recommendations, "hate Amanda Todd" popped up first. And I thought, who's Amanda Todd? Amanda, you know, she must be some celebrity or Justin Bieber's current, you know, current girlfriend or something. Turns out Amanda Todd was this girl who had posted a really beautiful, touching, very depressing video on YouTube about being bullied and then killed herself. Mm. And I went into the rabbit hole of this story and thought, wow, I've never heard of this girl. And there was this painful poetry of her video. She's sort of holding up all these cards with writing on them saying, "Nobody sees me and I'm just so alone and this is my story and this is what happened to me." And it occurred to me that that video of hers had gone up right at the same time that my Kickstarter video went up, which, right, if you've seen it, is me holding a bunch of cards asking my fans to help me make my album. And I just wrote a blog about the sadness of it and the poetry of it and a lot about what you were just discussing. Is like, I got bullied in high school too, but, you know, Facebook didn't follow me around and it didn't follow me home and I couldn't look it up in the middle of the night. Mm. And I just asked people to share their stories, and they poured in. Literally 1,000 people commented on this blog with their stories. But they didn't just share their stories. They started talking to each other, and it was really amazing to see this trust going on between my fans. My older fans were commenting on the blog and sending my younger fans their phone numbers because my younger fans were saying they wanted someone to talk to, and this sort of whole little community sprouted up around it.
Well, Amanda, hang on there for just a second, because I mean, what you're talking about is sort of a positive pushback from against the tide of negativity that can overwhelm people online, and I want to delve into that a little bit more. But before we do that, I mean, you might be interested to hear what Emily has to say, because you did really interesting research on, you know, what the major social networks are doing in terms of trying to get a handle on sometimes the anonymous, but very often the not anonymous postings that are the things that torment kids. I mean, you went and visited Facebook yourself.
I did. Yeah. And what I found was that while Facebook has a policy against bullying and harassment, enforcing it is a real challenge. They're getting 2 million complaints a week. Not all of them are about bullying, but a lot of them are. And Silicon Valley is not a place where it's it's proved of to hire a whole warehouse full of staffers to go through all of these complaints. They have a relatively small number of people working on them that I saw, and they were going through them extremely quickly. They were basically optimizing for half a second. And so
they would look at the complaint for less than a second and decide whether or not it was legit or to do something about it.
Exactly. And, you know, bullying is very contextual. Sometimes it's more complicated. What I learned was that if a person themselves said they were bullied, if I complained about myself, they would take my word for it. So that was one way that they triaged, essentially. But they were trying to make a lot of very complicated, tricky decisions extremely quickly. And the other thing I learned was that Facebook at that point really wasn't working directly with schools. Schools often have moments where there's some bullying crisis at the school that also erupts online, or even kids planning, you know, fights in schools where gangs are a problem. There's no quick way for administrators or guidance counselors to alert the site, to ask them to shut down a thread, or just to, you know, help in some way. And after my visit, Facebook started a pilot project for a handful, small number of school administrators, but they have not expanded it.
Okay, so that's the Facebook side of things. I mean, what do you make of the fact that Amanda Palmer basically, I mean, she's got a very loyal following online, but she wrote one blog post and got thousands of responses of people saying, here's finally a place where I want to talk about this positively. I mean, it sounds like, is that evidence that there isn't more sort of a constructive use of digital media for anti-bullying efforts?
This is such a great, powerful example of what can happen when you have a strong online community and people can support each other. So I love this story. And I think what it shows is that when people find a digital space they feel is a trustworthy space where they can, with confidence, divulge things and talk about issues they care about, they really respond to that. So I'm so glad you did that, Amanda.
Amanda, I mean, do you think that if you hadn't been basically who you are, that this would or wouldn't have happened? Because I know in one of your posts you said, hey, if I were Lady Gaga, it would have been actually ugly and not supportive.
Oh, I don't think that's true. And Lady Gaga is actually one of the other artists out there who's actually trying to do what she can in her own way to tackle it. But the problem with someone as famous as Lady Gaga is that you've kind of got a signal to noise problem. You know, her community isn't like a small culty indie community like mine is, where people recognize each other and there aren't a whole lot of strangers. Lady Gaga's reach and fan base is so huge that she can't count on a manageable, intelligent conversation.
Right. I should say that, she has the Born This Way Foundation, right, which is really working aggressively on this.
Yeah, she's done really good work. But Amanda, I think you're right. There's an intimacy in your community, and it sounds like people were really building on that.
Okay. Well, before I actually hog the conversation between the three of us, there are a lot of people who want to join us and have something to say about this topic. So, listeners, I'm speaking with Emily Bazelon. Her new book is Sticks and Stones, Defeating the Culture of Bullying and Rediscovering the Power of Character and Empathy, and also Amanda Palmer, a great musician who has written quite beautifully about this on her blog and has created a spontaneous community of support for anti-bullying efforts as well. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Wow, the lines are full. So let's hear from some folks. Kate is calling from Somerville. You're on the air, Kate.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I did experience some bullying as a kid, but the reason I wanted to call was kind of to talk about me being in the other, kind of being in the other shoes of I think, sort of being a passive bully. So I never really thought of myself as someone who was an active bully. I never purposely taunted anyone or, was cruel to someone in that way. But there was a girl that I went to school with who was sort of odd. And I know that, knowing myself, I think I was a little bit socially awkward myself, sort of trying to figure out how to negotiate all of that social stuff. And this girl often engaged in ways that made me and other kids uncomfortable. She would sometimes grab and hug people too aggressively when she didn't really know them very well. And I think that I didn't really know how to express to this girl that I felt uncomfortable because I didn't know the language. I didn't know how to do that as a kid. I wasn't socially mature enough for that. And so we tended to run away from her physically as well as non-physically and ignore her and not engage with her.
Yeah.
And you know, there were kids who were more targeted in their behavior towards her, where they were more aggressively mean to her.
Well, Kate, let me take it back from you there. I'm sorry to interrupt, but let me take it back from you there, because you make an interesting point that I would love Emily and Amanda to respond to. Thank you so much for your call, Kate. I mean, when you hear Kate saying that she felt like she was a passive bully, does that carry the... I mean, that seems to be like the norm. Like, it's just hard to step in when maybe things are uncomfortable.
So that's true. Bullying almost always takes place in front of an audience. We know that kids only intervene about 1 out of 5 of the time. And when they do intervene, they can actually stop bullying half the time. So there's a real opportunity there. And then you have to ask, are there strategies that make it easier for kids? Because confronting a bully is a hard thing to do. So could Kate have done something to kind of stand with this girl as opposed to stand up to some kid who was being very aggressive? The other thing I think that Kate said that was really important is she didn't know how to express her own feelings. And that's something that parents and schools can really help instill in kids. How do you express and regulate your own emotions?
Yeah. Amanda, in your blog post, you wrote something really interesting about when you would be taunted or bullied when you were at school. And you in the post, you wrote that it always hurt, but you wore it like a badge of honor and repeated your standard teenage mantra, they are normal and therefore inferior in every way. I mean, I wanted to point that out because I wonder, did the fact that maybe people didn't step in, I mean, did that ever bother you?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think you have to remember that, like, pretty much all teenagers are fundamentally insecure and terrified of, you know, not being cool and not being liked. And that's, I mean, I feel like I've met teenagers all over the globe, and it's the one thing they all have in common. They're just all painfully insecure. It's really rare to meet a teenager who's not. And so, you know, whatever way you kind of, you know, wherever you fit in your social hierarchy, most teenagers are worried about it. Most teenagers don't want to step out of line and kind of put their necks out and be considered uncool or aligned with the wrong people or hanging out with the wrong folks or saying the wrong thing. And, you know, one thing that I wonder about is, like, how can you communicate to teenagers that you actually do look really cool and powerful when you, like, stand up for the person who's getting insulted, or, you know, when you stand up for yourself? And I mean, I was a pretty good actor as a teenager. And it's so funny, and I'd love to hear Emily talk about this, like, looking back and sharing stories now with the people I run into from high school, I thought so many people thought I was a loser from afar. And then I'll run into these people, and, you know, we're in our 20s and our 30s, and they say, oh, no, we thought you were so cool. You were just too cool to talk to anyone sitting there with your Walkman and your purple hair. And my take on it was just so different. And you wonder how much of that actually is going on.
Well, Emily?
And how our perceptions are so warped.
Well, I think you're right, Amanda. And it sounds like you were the kind of kid who sort of adversity made you stronger. You had your own sense of identity. And maybe you weren't happy the whole time and you felt excluded, but you were able to kind of use that to build up yourself. That does happen to kids who are excluded and bullied. There's a lot of resilience. Thank goodness. It's like one of our fundamental human attributes. The problem is that it doesn't work for everybody. And there are some kids who are much more vulnerable than you were or me, or I bet you. And so for them, it's harder to recover. And we see these higher rates of depression and anxiety and suicidal thinking even 20 years after people grow up.
I want to take another call. Bob is calling from Wrentham. You're on the air, Bob.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to nudge the conversation in a slightly different direction, because a lot of the talk has been focused on texting and Facebook and the online component of it. But in schools, the institution itself is structured in a way that sort of reinforces bullying. I'll tell you a story, but my daughter's a junior in the local school. I don't want to mention her name because she'll kill me. But she had a situation where about a week ago, she and a bunch of her friends went into town. They bickered about what trains to take, where to go, and how that was going to work out. So they got home. They continued the bickering throughout by cell phone and all the other traditional, the new ways of communicating. But then when she got to school, she was made to feel extraordinarily uncomfortable because she was the odd person out. So what she chose to do was to go to the assistant principal and advise them what was going on, because it really, you know, it got quite mean.
And did the school do anything once they were alerted to it?
Well, let me tell you that I was getting to that next. When she went to see the assistant principal at the school, he attacked her and told her that you know, you're reporting this of this. He started complaining about restraining orders and started complaining about all the paperwork that he was going to have to get involved in doing, and told her that if he finds out that she wasn't telling the truth, he's going to write her up as well. And my wife actually went to that meeting with her. And when my wife tried to interject, he looked at her and said, "You're here by a courtesy, and I don't want to hear from you."
Bob, thank you so much for your call, because I want to get Emily and Amanda to respond to that. Because, I mean, Emily, you write a lot, and we're not going to have enough time, sadly, to dig into it in detail about efforts that do go on in schools and what's effective and what's not. So I wonder if you might be able to give us the top line of, you know, positive things that seem to work that schools are doing.
One thing that schools really need to do is strengthen the connections between adults and students. And Bob, that call does not sound like a successful example of that, but schools can use positive reinforcement. Just getting students as teachers to focus on the ordinary things kids do well, that can really help change a dynamic in a school. And then another strategy that's had real success is changing the social norms by showing kids that bullying doesn't actually happen all the time. It's not a normal response. So for example, you can do a survey in a school and then put up posters or send out the message that 90% of the kids here don't deliberately exclude other kids. And then kids think of this as an outlier behavior and they're even less likely to do it.
Amanda Palmer, how is the comments and the community around your post, how is that going now? I mean, it's been some time since you first put that up.
Yeah, I mean, the sad thing about having a blog is that whenever I start the next conversation, you know, I put a video out or something, people feel like, okay, well, that conversation's over. And I'm actually trying to attack my blog in such a way where the conversations can stay alive, because the conversations were really deep and beautiful and I think really helpful. The interesting thing about the internet is, and we were talking about this earlier, is people do want to feel like they're in a cool, trustworthy space if they're going to divulge their stories and their feelings. And that's the interesting thing. Like, you could have the government, or you could have a school, or you could have some nonprofit effort say, okay, we're going to create a safe online space for people to talk about this. But that won't actually inspire people to talk about it. What usually inspires them to talk about it is a host.
Yeah.
So, you know, Lady Gaga or Oprah or me or someone saying, okay, this is a cool room that you can come in and talk about this stuff that's happened. And then also, it's great when it's cross-generational. And in my case, I'm just lucky. I've got older fans, I've got younger fans, I've got fans who are 50 and fans who are 15. And they're all really smart, compassionate, intelligent people. And so, you know, just encouraging the people who have that kind of access and power to steer the conversation where it's useful.
Right.
And, you know, that's kind of tricky and difficult to do, but it's also it's sort of the beautiful thing about the internet. It's like near the poison grows the antidote.
Well, actually, I'm sorry to cut you off there, Amanda, but I just wanted to jump in the last couple seconds, because that got me thinking of a thing that I really wanted to ask Emily, and that is, I have a 2.5-year-old, right? So I like read books like yours. And on the one hand, journalistically, I think, okay, this is interesting. There's a lot of good analysis there. On the other hand, my heart was just racing, because I thought, this is the world I'm going to send my child into. But, you know, how much of these efforts really need to begin in terms of the home environment?
A lot of them. You know, this is something parents can really help with by talking around the dinner table. It's as simple as, what does it feel like to be in someone else's shoes? You know, how do you help instill empathy in your kids? That's a really clear way you can do it. You can use books, you can use music, and I think Amanda's site is a wonderful example.
Well, Emily Bazelon is senior editor at Slate and author of Sticks and Stones, Defeating the Culture of Bullying and Rediscovering the Power of Character and Empathy. It is a great new resource, great journalism. Emily, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Amanda Palmer, musician formerly of the Dresden Dolls, one of the great innovators of music today. Thank you, Amanda, for joining us as well.
Thank you. And in the words of Bill and Ted, be excellent to each other.
Listeners, there's more of the show coming up. It's hard to beat that, but stick with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.